Today on Doomed! We did it! We got through two nights of Democratic debates on CNN. 20 people in total. And you all joined me last night with the good folks over at the Bad Praxis podcast to talk about night one with Bernie and Elizabeth Warren and a bunch of moderates and centrists. Now, join me to discuss night two with Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, Bill de Blasio, Julian Castro, Cory Booker, Michael Bennett, Tulsi Gabbard, Andrew Yang. Is there anyone I'm forgetting? My guest this, I can't even say evening, because we're like at midnight now here on the East Coast, Mike Figueredo of the Humanist Report. Mike, thank you for joining me.
Thank you. It's really good to be back. I always have a blast dunking on the candidates and making fun of them with you. It's always a good time, Matt.
Right. Mike, for those tuning in to a post-debate show with me for the first time, Mike joined us the last debates on MSNBC, and it was a fantastic time discussing these 20 people with you that I was like, you know what? Let's do it all over again. But this time, though, I split it up. So we won't have to deal with everyone we dealt with last night. We can solely focus on only 10 people who are on tonight.
Yeah, it's tough. I probably have bags under my eyes. Like, this is a lot. Two nights, 20 candidates is a lot. So I appreciate that you divided it because, I talked about, the first night on my show. And then tonight is really interesting. So I'm curious to get your take because I'm all over the place because I kind of feel like the candidates were all over the place in terms of like winners, losers. I think there was, there were clear losers. In terms of winner, that was a little bit more subjective, a little bit more tricky, but we'll hash it all out.
Yeah. I agree with you on that. It was, last night was, there were clear sides. It was Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren versus the moderates. And the moderates last night were much more moderate than the moderates tonight. Mm-hmm. I guess if you want to carve out Joe Biden, but I'm talking about like the low level moderates, not like the front runners. Because last night we had Delaney, Tim Ryan, Hickenlooper. It was just like the job squad, for those who want a wrestling reference, of the moderates teaming up against like Stone Cold Steve Austin and The Rock of leftists in Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. So tonight, though, it was a free-for-all. It was like, I don't know if you ever watched wrestling, Mike, but tonight was like a late 90s episode of WCW Nitro where the NWO black and white team ran out, and then the NWO B team ran out, and then Lex Luger and DDP and Sting were fighting for WCW. It was just an all-out brawl. Do you follow any of my references?
I got about zero of your references because I don't watch wrestling. But I will say, I get the point that you're making. It was really difficult to figure out what was going on. Like, after it was finished, I did my own post-debate analysis on my channel, and I just had to sit back and think, who actually won this? There was, like, really, I think that you can make the case that half of the candidates came out victorious. I think that there were two clear losers. I think that Joe Biden was a loser. I think Kamala Harris, surprisingly, was a loser in this debate, which I actually, after she performed so well at the first debate, I kind of would have expected her to come more prepared, especially like with the Tulsi Gabbard thing, because Tulsi Gabbard criticized her last week and she should have expected some type of attack from Tulsi. But you can tell that, when her entire prosecutorial record was just laid out there, there was nothing. And it was bad to the point where I think maybe we may see her dip in the polls. I don't know. But certainly this has got to cap that surge because that was not a good look. Joe Biden was just, it was a dog pile on him. Everyone was taking turns taking a dump on Joe Biden, and it was great to watch.
I don't know if watching everyone take a dump on Joe Biden was so great. No, I know what you're saying now. But no,
the wording of that was a little bit.
I absolutely agree with you that Kamala Harris underperformed tonight. I don't know who the winner of tonight is, but she, without a doubt, is the loser. And I don't take any pleasure in saying this, because strategically, for me, who I like in the race, nothing would have been better for the outcomes I would have liked to have seen than for Kamala Harris to have given Joe Biden a little bit of deja vu from the last debate. And for her to have come out of this debate like she came out of the last one, owning Joe Biden. That just didn't happen. Her attacks on Joe Biden on healthcare fell flat, mainly because she isn't even defending Medicare for All.
Like, but she was presented as like the standard bearer for Medicare for All. And she doesn't support it anymore. She backed away explicitly.
Right, right. Because no one, like, this is the problem with the two nights and splitting up the candidates. Like, I get ratings-wise, you need to take those four top-tier candidates and split them up. It probably was worse for MSNBC to have that first debate with just Elizabeth Warren as the top-tier candidate. And then the other three were on the second night. So CNN thought they'd do it this way. But it doesn't make any sense from a debate standpoint. You know, the whole important reason for doing these things, the real reason, not the ratings, the actual debate, to do that, because you just have this bizarre thing where you have people who are polling 17, 18, 19, 20, 30% for some people in the polls, arguing with someone who's 1%, 2%, maybe even below that. Like, it's pointless. And I get, you know, having, and I don't even like the guy, but I get having someone like Buttigieg, or even someone who's shown consistently that, you know, might be a little bit, but someone like a Yang has been slowly inching up. I get, throw someone out there, someone in there like that, just so, you know, we could have a wild card. Let's see how they do. They are moving up in the polls, so they deserve to be on the stage. I get those people. But well, listen, de Blasio was thankfully on the stage tonight, because there needed to be a progressive voice. And I can't believe I'm saying that about de Blasio, but he played the role of the progressive tonight. And he shouldn't have been on the stage, though. The guy is under 1%. He doesn't even have 1% of the polls. I don't even remember how he got in. He got in because of some sort of weird loophole in terms of, I don't even know. I don't remember. But he's the one who knocked out Gravel, I think, who actually got 65,000 donors to donate to him.
Which makes it super frustrating, because it's like, we know what the criteria is. Why are some of these candidates who definitely did not meet the criteria getting into these debates when Mike Gravel did not? Because regardless if you think he's a real candidate or not, he's not running to win. But, you know, you set out these requirements, he met them, and then we have Steve Bullock on the stage. We have, like, you know, Bill de Blasio instead of Mike Gravel. It's frustrating. So, yeah, this whole healthcare debate, just in comparison with last night, was a train wreck to watch. And it was really, I think that this backfired for Kamala Harris, because what was funny is she crafted this, you know, watered down pseudo Medicare for All bill, expecting to kind of shield herself from the criticism that Bernie and Liz were taking from the centrists. You know, they say, oh, well, you want to take private insurance away from people. And rather than just standing her ground, you know, and saying, no, we're going to do Medicare for All, this is why it's better, she chose to try to have her cake and eat it too. And all she did was end up crafting a garbage Medicare for All bill that keeps private insurance, which defeats the whole purpose of single payer. And then on top of that, she pissed off progressives. And on the debate stage, you know, all the attacks against her were the same attacks that were lobbed against Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. So she didn't accomplish anything. She made everyone angry. And the problem was, she was supposedly the rep for Medicare for All, and she's not. So this was a really annoying debate to watch when it came to healthcare. I mean, some people chimed in with good points. I think that Gillibrand made a phenomenal point when she kind of, you know, took an indirect shot at Kamala by saying, look, the problem is the for-profit health insurance companies. I thought Tulsi Gabbard was great to call out Kathleen Sebelius, because Kamala Harris is trying to say, look, the former HHS secretary is saying that my plan is great, but her plan relies heavily on Medicare Advantage, which is a for-profit program, which is an industry that Kathleen Sebelius is in.
Right.
So, I mean, it's an inherent conflict of interest. And, you know, there weren't enough voices to call that out. And we've got people like, you know, Gillibrand to chime in and de Blasio and Gabbard. But the two main people who led this debate were Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. And that's not the real debate that we're having. I mean, you could argue Joe Biden to an extent, right? Because, you know, there are the people like Buttigieg and O'Rourke who are repping the public option, which is what Joe Biden is, you know, proposing currently. But, I mean, we needed someone to really unapologetically represent Medicare for all and real Medicare for all, you know, which gets rid of private insurance companies. And we didn't get that. And it was frustrating to watch.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And like you brought up Tulsi, and listen, I'm not the biggest Tulsi Gabbard fan. I don't hate her like some people on the more liberal side of the Democratic Party seem hate her. I just realized that she may be a good ally if we need to have her as an ally. But, you know, she has some very problematic positions.
There's critiques, definitely.
Right. And at the same time, if we're going to have 20 people on the debate stage, then you have to understand that some people are there to serve a purpose that's not to win the Democratic nomination. It's that simple. And, you know, I'm sure someone like an Inslee is running to be president, but I also think a guy like Inslee, especially after seeing how great he was tonight, also understands that more realistically he's on the stage to center climate change because that's his issue. I'm not saying he's the only one to have that issue, but that he's made that his number one, his pet issue. And, you know, that's what you got to take Tulsi Gabbard for, in my opinion. And she's out there. I don't think actually her issue is, you know, end the forever wars, but I actually think that is not really her issue, even though that's being portrayed as it. Because she is, again, she's not someone like an Inslee who's had a history taking on climate change. She's actually had some very problematic foreign policy positions, which sort of put into question, for me at least, her commitment to actually ending the forever wars.
I was so pissed last week when she voted, you know, for the BDS bill. So,
right.
Yeah, I feel you.
Right. But if she's going to go after Kamala Harris's prosecutorial history when she was AG in California, I'm going to take it because that was a great moment. She did not stutter. She did not mess up. She did not get her facts wrong. Everything she said was legit, and you can confirm it if you're a Kamala fan who doesn't want to believe it. This is all real. She has a very problematic background from her time as Attorney General in California. I believe some of the things Gabbard brought up were the marijuana arrests under Kamala, how when she was asked about if she ever smoked marijuana, she basically took it as a joke and made it and laughed about it. She tried to stifle information that could have absolve a man who was on death row, and the courts had to basically force her to not hide this information. It's stunning to see that, you know, Tulsi had to be the one to step up to bring this up. I mean, I get why Biden couldn't, but where was Booker? Where was anyone else, really?
Yeah, and you can tell that Tulsi, like, she legitimately ran out the clock. Like, she had a longer list because Kamala's record is really bad. You know, she intervened to stop a trans inmate from getting gender confirmation surgery. There's a number of things. So Tulsi probably could have gone on for like 2 minutes. And what was really weird is that the response that Kamala had was just to kind of laugh and be awkward. And, you know,
I don't know if you saw, because I know you were doing recordings for your channel after the debate, but she was interviewed by CNN after the debate, and they asked her about that moment, and she basically changed the subject by bringing up that Tulsi is a Assad apologist.
I saw that right when I was actually going to message you, and then I retweeted. I'm like, oh, come on. Like, that's what Tim Ryan said about Tulsi, too. It's like, okay, you, if your response is to avoid the criticism that was lobbed against you and just go to like this random smear that is not persuasive at all, you've lost. And look, at that January CNN town hall that Kamala Harris had, there was an audience member that asked her about her criminal justice record, and she didn't answer it in a very persuasive manner then either. You would have thought by now, someone who's this charismatic, who's this rehearsed, she would have come up with a response. The fact that she hasn't is honestly baffling. Like, I think it shows me that she's not as strong as I thought she was after seeing her in that first debate. I mean, she has her strengths, but she certainly has her weaknesses. And, you know, this criminal justice record is her Achilles heel. You can talk about all these wonderful things that you did. Nobody's saying that her record was 100% bad. But what we are saying is there are some very big red flags that we want you to explain to us, and you haven't done that. You've run away from criticism, and it's just not a good look. Like, she's not winning anybody over when she just laughs or, you know, pivots away when this is brought up. Like, we need answers.
Also, the whole point of these debates is to reach out to the people who aren't in the political bubble that you and me are, and, you know, 99% of politics Twitter is in. The point of these debates is to reach out to people who are watching television tonight and going, oh, let me tune in and see. I haven't really been paying attention to the race. Let me see who's doing what and who these people are. A good portion, I'm going to assume, I'm sure if I find data and pull it up ratings-wise, I'm sure it'll back me up. A good portion of people tune out before it ends, I'm sure, but I'm sure a lot of people are gone the second it's over. So to bring these things up, not on the debate stage, as lame as a response it is, it's still a response that, you know, for the whole political theater of it, might win some people who aren't all that policy-oriented. To just have that in your back pocket for the post-debate panel seems weak to me, too.
It's honestly baffling, because she's done, like, she's made some missteps, right? Her Medicare for All flip-flops have been just... it's really been embarrassing. But I mean, you'd think that she would have prepared for something like this. This is her one thing that she absolutely must explain. She has the fact that she has no, you know, explanation. I think maybe I overestimated her after, because I mean, her performance last time was just spectacular. I don't think anybody would, you know, deny that she was the clear winner of both nights. But I mean, this time, when you start to surge in the polls, eyeballs start to get turned to you as you are viewed as a front runner. That's when you're going to have to, you know, anticipate these types of attacks. Go ahead.
You want to think hurt her? She was not prepared. Like you said, the attacks, but I also think on top of the attacks aimed at her, she was not prepared for the amount of time they would spend on her. That's right. What I was thinking, because I don't remember all the people who were on the stage with her for the MSNBC-NBC debate, but I do remember that Bernie was on stage with Biden and Kamala, which means that at the very least, the time was split between the three of them for the most part as the front runners, which means she was able to get in that quick snipe at Biden last time and get out, and they would have had to go to someone else and not just go back and forth between Biden and Kamala. That's what happened this time. And she may have been able to hit him once the first time, but then he would rebut her and they'd go back to her and she wouldn't be ready for it. And, you know, I don't think Biden performed well, but I think Biden was better than her. So in the instances where the two of them were interacting, he sort of came out the winner in my view.
Yeah, it depends on the situation. I think that on healthcare, you could say he was the winner, because she wasn't defending her proposal very well. And even though he was right for the wrong reasons, I mean, he's correct when he says you're a flip-flopper on this issue. I don't know if he said that, I'm paraphrasing, but I mean, she's gone back and forth on the issue of Medicare for All. So, I mean, these are all weaknesses that are kind of being laid out now, and she knows how to play, you know, to the crowd. She can say these lines that are rehearsed that get applause. But when it comes to really forcing her, you know, into a corner and getting her to defend herself and, you know, just take a strong stance, she's not good at, like, just being, you know, these off-the-cuff things. Like, you have to be able to adapt. And she did not adapt during this debate. And it showed, and it was bad. Like, Here's the thing about why she needs to speak to her criminal justice record. Like, didn't Donald Trump sign the criminal justice bill that Cory Booker, you know, was pushing for last year?
Right.
So what is if she's against Donald Trump, what is Donald Trump going to do? He's going to replicate the strategy that he used in 2016, and he's going to try to outflank Kamala from her left, and Trump will bring all of this up. Now, of course, nobody believes that Trump has any street cred here, but it's going to help him win the debates. Like, it's just she's got to get better at this, and maybe there's no explanation because, you know, these are just indefensible positions, so you can't defend them. But, I mean, you've got to try. Doing more than just laughing or changing the subject is probably going to be a key to her survival.
Right. And then there was a whole portion of the debates where she just disappeared. Like, she weirdly enough, actually, it was when they spoke about, you know, the criminal justice system for a long time. And I would say, like, it took up a huge chunk of that first hour. And we didn't hear from her to the very end. It was almost like she didn't want to enter. I mean, well, we see why. Mm-hmm. But it's bizarre that she just disappeared for so long. It felt like – I'm actually really wondering – I haven't seen it yet. Maybe I could pull it up now. The time each person spoke for. Because I swear I feel like she was barely in this debate after that healthcare back and forth with her and Biden.
I believe she spoke the second most, but I absolutely hear what you're saying, because it did feel like throughout like the middle portion she was gone. And it was like, when she's gone, because she was such a big presence at the last debate, then you know something is wrong. Like, for her to fade into the background, and I get it, like, once you start to surge, you do kind of have this incentive to just maintain, right? You don't have to overperform and risk, you know, it being a disaster. You can just maintain. But you know, she kind of set the bar relatively high, and she set everyone's expectations high, and she absolutely underperformed. And it was incredible to watch. She's not good under pressure. She can do a phenomenal job, like I said, at, you know, reciting these rehearsed lines. But, you know, in terms of debate strategy, if you can't, you know, respond well enough and quick enough to these things, if you can't, you know, be quick on your toes and think fast, you're just not going to do well. And it showed. I'd be interesting to see, like, a week or two from now, how the polls look, because I feel like, if I had to guess, this certainly would cap her surge. But if she doesn't take a hit from this, I would actually be surprised.
Right. I think she will take a hit. And I don't think it's going to be a hit in a way where it's like, oh, she did bad, I can't like her anymore. I think it's just going to be like someone not even like subconsciously being like, I really enjoyed Biden in this debate, or I really enjoyed Warren in this debate, or I really enjoyed, I don't know, Booker in this debate. I like them. It's not going to be like they're negative on Harris. It's going to be they went positive on someone else, and Harris wasn't able to give a performance that held them.
Totally agree. This wasn't a death blow. Like, last time I felt like she kind of gave Joe Biden the death blow. This wasn't a death blow for Kamala Harris, but I think it was probably a massive disappointment for people who were rooting for her, because, you know, you expect a lot. You give us this amazing performance. You topple Joe Biden, and then the second debate, you already steam out. I mean, we're just getting started, you know.
Right.
Iowa isn't for another, what is it, 180-something days away?
Right.
So, you know, it's I'm a little bit shocked at her performance. I definitely expected more.
Right. I'm looking at the time speaking now. It seems like Biden spoke for 21 minutes, and Harris came in second with speaking for 17 minutes. But that's actually, for you know, time speaking in a debate, that gap is actually worlds apart. Like, if you look at yesterday's, Bernie and Warren were literally just, like, seconds apart, maybe, like, close to a minute at most in terms of total time spoke. So, she definitely disappeared for a bit. I gotta say, like, everyone else other than Biden and Harris had a good moment tonight. Like, no moment, like, you know, you think of the two debates, you're thinking of Bernie Sanders going, I wrote the damn bill. You're thinking of Bernie Sanders throwing his hands up in the air. You're thinking of Elizabeth Warren's line where she brought up, like, I don't get why anyone would run for president in a Democratic primary to say we can't do things. Like, those are three moments off the top of my head that got press, stood out, people are still talking about them. They were big moments. I can't think of anything like that from this debate. And that's just because everyone just had good little moments. Nothing that really, and it was all from the minor league candidates. I mean, Gillibrand, she was missing for like the first hour and a half, 2 hours of the debate, and then showed up in the very end.
And she was daydreaming when she got called on. Like, did you notice? I forgot which question it was, but she was like taken off guard, like, oh, I'm here at the debate.
Right. Hickenlooper did that yesterday, I remember, right? Yeah. And then I thought she was going to get Biden, and then Biden made her look really bad by having an actual answer to the thing she was bringing up about his previous comments about women in the workplace and his support for, I can't remember now. Was she the one who brought up the Hyde Amendment?
No, Kamala brought up the Hyde Amendment. I don't know what comment that Gillibrand was referring to.
I'm not sure either, but he brought up that when they met previously, she was all gung-ho for him and was thanking him for how much he's done for women. It was just like, ow, that's not going to look good for her, actually, I think. That was a bad moment. Yang, surprisingly, first of all, kudos to CNN for not turning off Andrew Yang's mic. What I really think happened is that Yang got himself a media coach, because the guy was a bit more assertive. He hit his marks. The automation thing, I get that's his thing, but he's bringing it up a little bit too much, in my opinion.
I agree totally.
And it's not the equivalent to Bernie Sanders bringing up income inequality in the 1%, because when Bernie brings those issues up, he's discussing how income inequality in the 1% is affecting, for example, climate change, or affecting living wage laws, or affecting health care. So it makes sense when he does it. The automation thing is a very specific thing we're talking about, so it doesn't really fit into there. If that's your thing, it doesn't fit into every nook and cranny like you'd like. However,
the climate change, right, foreign policy,
right. However, I will say that when he was asked about the issues women face in the workplace, I thought they were going to catch him off guard. From my experience of seeing him just talk about nothing but automation. But the guy actually had a good answer, and it made me think, why is he just sticking to automation if he could have good answers on these other issues? And I don't think he's going to win, and I don't think he's quite worth all the press he's getting from having a Yang gang and being an internet meme favorite. But the guy isn't bad, you know?
Yeah, he I actually, like, towards the beginning of the debate, I'm like, wow, he's crushing it. And he was brilliantly, like, linking issues to his UBI, which I think is smart. It's kind of what I expected him to do. And when I interviewed him, he kind of did the same thing. And it was endearing, right? It wasn't like a turnoff, like, oh, you're talking about this again. But then, like, towards the, you know, third quarter of the debate, it's like, okay, you're bringing up UBI now. Like, okay, I don't need to hear about UBI, you know, if we're talking about foreign policy. Right. You don't need to bring that up if you're talking about climate change. Like, at the last debate, in his closing statement, he said something to the effect of, like, you know, we can focus on climate change when we get the economic boot off people's neck. It's like, I don't like that. He does risk kind of becoming a one-trick pony if he keeps this up. But I think it is clever to link his UBI program to, you know, specific policies. He just needs to be better at gauging when it's appropriate to do that. He absolutely stepped up. His first performance was actually surprising, because I anticipated that he would be relatively solid, because, you know, so long as he got the chance to rep his UBI bill or proposal, you know, that would be sufficient for him, because that's what he's trying to push. And it just fell flat last time. This time, he really stepped up, and that's probably good for him. I believe he already qualified for the September debate, right. So it wouldn't have been make or break. But still, he needed a good night, and I think he did have a good night. You can honestly make the case that he won, but I think the over-reliance on UBI maybe would have been an issue, and I could be just, you know, too nitpicky. But I do think that he needs to kind of diversify his platform.
Right.
Because he does, like, he does have a relatively robust policy platform, and he doesn't talk about other things. Like, he wants to lower the voting age to 16. He supports, he's gone back and forth on Medicare for All, but I mean, he needs to talk about more things than just UBI. Right. But I mean, he had a great performance, not to be too, you know, down on Yang.
Right, right. No, I agree with all that, for sure. I think he definitely stepped it up, and if he expands what he's going to talk about on the stage, I think he'll do well up until it comes time to vote in the primaries, in which he will promptly lose. there's no opening there. I mean, I will say this, as much as I think he stepped it up, and I actually agree with many of the things he was saying, and I think a UBI in some form, not his version, but a UBI in some form, yeah, is a good idea. And I do appreciate the automation bringing that to the forefront. That's his issue, because it is a big issue, just mm-hmm. not always in the way he brings it up. But, you know, I also think he speaks on the stage on, like, what I'd like to hear from a Democratic candidate, and that's way too much entrepreneurship jerking off and just, like, mm-hmm. you know, filleting over, you know, small businesses and in the tech sector, the private sector in Silicon Valley. It's like, listen, that's not what the Democratic candidate needs to be. You know, it's not.
Yeah.
It's just, it was very reminiscent. When he does that, it's very reminiscent of when John Delaney thought it'd be a good idea last night to be like, listen, no one knows the healthcare business better than me because I've worked in the business. It's like, well, that's the problem.
Yeah, yeah. John Delaney said, we need a president who's a president of the public sector and the private sector. It's like, ooh, no. Read the room, dude. Read the room.
Right.
Jesus.
But I will definitely say Yang was up there as one of the better tonight. Mm-hmm. I also thought Inslee did really well.
I agree.
I wanted to go back, actually. Yang had an interesting line tonight, which I didn't remember the climate change line you brought up, but now in retrospect, with both these lines, doesn't really weird that he would say both of them. But he brought up how we're 10 years too late for climate change.
Yeah,
and
that stood out to me.
And that, I mean, we very well might be, and no one really wants to bring up the pessimistic side of things, but mm-hmm. that very well could be the case. And if that is true, we need to prepare for the fact that there's no going back, and we need to help the people who are in the danger areas.
Yeah, nobody talks about, you know, climate change adaptation. We're all focused on mitigation. But if we want to survive the reality of climate change, which is already here, we have to, you know, equip ourselves with the tools we need economically, you know, institutionally, to not die, you know. Right. So we have to talk about how to adapt as well. So that was a good point. I was kind of hoping that he would expand on that, but, you know, it was good that he brought it up. We should certainly be, at least, you know, if we're not 10 years too late, we should be acting as if that's the case, because, you know, we can't afford to mess right. up on this issue. It's kind of important. And I'm glad that, like, I think Jay Inslee did was great in challenging Biden here.
Right, right. I just want to keep on the Yang thing for a second, because this is something I've never talked about before, because the idea really has never come up. I mean, even the banner carriers, the standard bearers of the left, modern left right now, you know, at least politically, you know, our elected officials, AOC, Ilhan Omar, Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren. No one's ever talked about that. What do we do if it's too late? And if Andrew Yang really wants to separate himself from the rest of the pack, he should be getting together with his policy people tonight and talk about, we should put this towards the forefront. This should be our pet issue. Let's put automation as a secondary thing we bring up. And the climate thing is really an interesting thing, and I think it would actually speak to a lot of people in the Democratic base. I really do.
Yeah, yeah. It's certainly, like, there needs to be a bigger focus on climate change. And, you know, thankfully tonight we actually got a pretty sizable chunk of the debate dedicated to climate change. I don't know if there's going to be a full climate change debate. I know that Tom Perez said no at first, and then maybe there's some movement there. But it needs to happen, because for the most part, we've just seen this issue presented as, well, is it or is it not happening, you know? And now it's kind of moved to where, well, is it, you know, it's happening, but is it anthropogenic or is it not? And we need adults to talk about climate change, and we need everyone to watch adults talk about climate change, you know, for 2 hours. That would be really, really constructive.
Right. And you know who else had a really good night tonight? Not to segue off, but I just thought of him now, and I don't want to forget. He might actually very well be the winner of the night, I think, because he was able to really establish himself. Not just jump in and throw a good line in on specific issues. I think he established himself as a real candidate tonight, and that's Cory Booker. And I'm in no way a Cory Booker fan, but his tussle with Joe Biden went much better than Kamala Harris's one. When he specifically said to Joe Biden, when they're talking about criminal justice, he specifically said, if you want to talk about your history, I'm surprised you do. You know, it was his line was actually better. I'm spitballing it, what it was. But he did well tonight. And, you know, he is another one that he talks a tough game on an issue. And then you look at his own history on that specific issue, and it's like, ooh, he messed up himself on these policies. But you know, he hit Biden in ways that no one else on the stage did tonight.
Yeah, and Biden kind of inadvertently endorsed him for president as well, which was weird. I don't know if you caught that. I was just like, what? Because he said, no, what the president is saying, or what the future president, and then he like touched Cory Booker's arm, and I'm like, did you literally just endorse Cory Booker? And Cory Booker was savvy enough to like pick up on that and said something to the effect of, well, I'm glad that I got your endorsement for me as the president, or something like that. Like, Joe Biden was all over the place. Not to change the subject, but before I forget, I have to bring this up. What were your thoughts on Joe Biden 30330?
Oh, my God. I think it was Sam Cedar who brought up that why is nobody talking about this in the post-debate shows? If Bernie Sanders said that, he would be eviscerated. They would be talking about he's so old, he doesn't know what a website is, he doesn't know what a text message is. It clearly shows that his age is a factor, he needs to get out of the game or something like that. It was just full-blown ignored. And it was just so weird. Like, he was clearly reading something. I don't know, the teleprompter or something. I guess they're allowed to read from a teleprompter for their closing statements.
Oh, wow.
But he was looking at something, clearly looking at something, because otherwise, what would that even mean, what he said? You know, that's not something you just misremember. That's something you read and misread as you're saying it live on the air.
And it's join, not Joe, which you text to that number. It's like, how do you, like, botch that bad?
Right, and the weird thing is that a bunch of people went out there and, like, started registering the domain name, like joe30330.com, joe30330.com, which is, you know, go for it. If you could grab a viral moment out of that and get some traffic to whatever your cause is. I think someone is forwarding one of the domains to, like, a joke presidential-run site. Another one is forwarding it to Pete Buttigieg's website, which in my opinion is a complete waste of that domain. But he didn't even say .com, because that's not what it was. Like, like, there's no one realized, like, if it would be one thing if he was like joe3030.com. Weird that, you know, you wouldn't realize that what the hell is 3030 when you're running for 2020, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But then on top of that, it wasn't even that. It wasn't Joe 3030 either. It was Joe 30330. But then on top of that all, it wasn't even a .com. There was no .com. So he goes, go to Joe 30330. And it was, what? Like, what is that even? And then you go online, you find out, like you said, it's a text message prompt. You text 30330. You text the word Joe to that number. But again, it wasn't Joe. It's join. So we got, like, every facet of it wrong.
It was so bad. It was so bad. And, yeah, like you said, that's such a good point. Or kudos to Sam Cedar for bringing it up. Yeah, because if Bernie did that, of course they would be pouncing on him, because nobody talks about Joe Biden's age. It's always about Bernie's age. Is Bernie too old? Pete Buttigieg, do you think that Bernie Sanders is too old? But nobody brings it up when it comes to Biden. Nobody does.
Right. And with Biden, there are moments where he is clearly having an elderly moment, to be honest with you.
You can tell. Yeah, yes. You can tell.
Yes. Whereas Bernie is, I've not noticed any of those with him. I mean, he's still as sharp as ever.
If we want to talk about electability, like, do we not think that Republicans will come up with all types of conspiracy theories like they did with Hillary? Remember, like, what was it that she had Parkinson's
for
or something?
Sure. There's going to be,
like, they're going to say that about Joe Biden. Oh, he has, like, when you become senile, he's senile, that there's something wrong with him. Like, it's just a disaster waiting to happen if Joe Biden is the nominee. Disaster.
Right. Well, I don't know if you realize, but if you notice when they do these attacks on people, it's always that, and this actually goes for sort of not all the way, because obviously even the worst of the Democrats don't go there. But let's just bring up how Joe Biden is always attacking Medicare for All, and he attacks Kamala for it, he attacks Warren for it. But when he tries to attack Bernie for it, he can't. He just goes, you know, I got to hand it to Bernie. He's honest about what it is. Or got to hand it to Bernie. He knows what he's talking about when it comes to Medicare. Obviously, he then brings up how he doesn't agree with it. But at the same time, it's like you can't attack Bernie because from that angle, because there's no way to do it. And what I was going to say is that if you notice when, like, Trump attacks Bernie, other than the nickname Crazy Bernie, because they are trying to say his policies are crazy, there's never really been an attack on Bernie from the right in terms of, like, he's unfit physically. It's just they are brutally petrified of his actual policies.
Mm-hmm.
There's no, like, fake Bernie health scares. There's none of that ridiculousness.
Which is actually kind of refreshing. Like, I'm sure it would come up if he's the nominee. Like, I'm sure that there would be conspiracy theories.
Oh, they'll try,
theories.
For sure.
But, like, yeah, Bernie, I think he just does such a good job at, like, being energetic and whatnot. And, like, I feel like he has more energy than young people. And he always says it, you know, people, you know, reporters can't keep up with me on the campaign trail. So it's good. Like, if you are going to be running for president and you're that old, you definitely want to present yourself as someone who has it together. You know, you have it all there, right? Like, no Joe 3030 moments, because that's going to be a recipe for disaster. You know, I mean, Republicans are going to do whatever, so I'm not really too worried about their attacks. But, like, you know, I don't know. I guess the point about the double standard between Joe and Bernie is what bothers me. But to your point about Joe Biden not really attacking Bernie, I hadn't noticed that before, how he kind of – it is like he handles Bernie with kid gloves, and I think Trump does the same as well. And I believe what this is Bernie Sanders just – he knows his shit. Like, even Elizabeth Warren, she can speak intelligently about Medicare for All and whatnot, but I mean, she only kind of recently unequivocally said Medicare for All before kind of waffling back and forth. So Bernie has the consistency, and he can speak knowledgeably about these things because he wrote the damn bill. So I think that they're intimidated because Bernie is just, he's raw, he's authentic, and that does come across. Like, people, if you are debating Bernie, you do need to have your facts straight. And, you know, you need to be able to make it seem as if you're coming from a good faith position. But Bernie is trusted. He's the most popular politician in America for a reason. So it's tough. He's kind of like, you know, taboo in this election. You don't want to go after him because it could be a disaster. It's a gamble.
Right. And it's incredible how he gets ignored by the media when they're talking about this stuff. And there is no better example. There's 100 great examples, but no better, very relevant example is than the fact that I was watching the CNN post debate stuff, like I was just talking to you about before, and they were bringing up Elizabeth Warren over and over again as, you know, they need all the top tier candidates on the stage next time. They need to have Elizabeth Warren up there with them. They just wouldn't bring up Bernie's name. I'm sitting there going, are you guys kidding me? Are you really going to talk about the candidates from last night and not act like Warren was any better than Bernie? Like, I personally thought Bernie was better than Warren last night, even though they were both great. But at the very least, the calculation it can't be anything other than the fact that Bernie and Warren both killed it last night, equally at the very least. So how you could bring up Warren in that sense and not also bring up Bernie, it's very purposefully. That's the only way.
Yeah, totally. And you know what? We're kind of seeing like the media's love fest with Elizabeth Warren. They just, this is my sense, and this is all speculation because I'm not in their heads. You know, I'm not in these production meetings. It seems like they really want all the Bernie people to transition to Warren, you know, get the, all the progressives behind one candidate who is a little bit more appealing to, you know, everyone. Like Warren is not going to be as strong on issues like healthcare as Bernie Sanders, or maybe she will. Maybe she'll prove me wrong. But Bernie just has more consistency there, so he's more stronger. He's the bigger threat overall to the status quo and, you know, the establishment and whatnot. But once, you know, if they can successfully do that, then they will turn their attention to Elizabeth Warren, try to bring down Elizabeth Warren and get people to go for the, you know, the next best progressive, Pete Buttigieg or Kamala or whoever. So I feel like it's just, this is all purposeful. Like they are intentionally excluding Bernie Sanders because he's the real threat. And he still really is the number one preferred choice among progressives.
Right, right. And let's, we've talked about, who have we talked about? We've brought up Tulsi, brought up Gillibrand, we brought up Kamala, Inslee, we briefly touched upon, Yang, Booker, Biden. We don't need to talk about
my list here.
We don't need to talk about Bennett, really, I guess. I mean, he had a great line, actually, and I can't remember what it was.
Did he?
He did, actually.
I feel like I just tuned out whenever he talked.
Oh, it was when he brought up how, why are we talking about segregation issues from 50 years ago when we're dealing with those same type of segregation issues today? He said
that. That was a good line.
If he was like the more moderate one on this stage, then he was considerably, again, not considering Biden as the front runner. You know, he was actually to the left of all the moderates last night at the first debate. He sort of falls into the background. De Blasio. I briefly brought him up. He took it upon himself to hold the progressive mantle tonight. I appreciate him constantly bringing it back to Biden. If it wasn't for him, a lot of those moments probably wouldn't have happened because he would consistently go hit Biden whenever he got a chance, which would then force other people to bringing up issues against Biden, too. Hurts him a lot that the fact that one of the major protester moments of the night was over the fact that the police officer, Daniel Pantaleo, who killed Eric Garner via the chokehold, NYPD banned the chokehold, is still working for the force, which is just ridiculous.
Insanity.
And just unforgivable and hurts any credibility he has. Also incredibly weird to see such New York-centric issues being brought up in, I mean, obviously it's not completely New York-centric in the broader sense, police brutality and then the lead issue, but specifically bringing up the Eric Garner case. And then NYCHA, public housing in New York. Very weird to see talked about at a Democratic presidential national debate stage. But de Blasio being there made it get brought up, I guess. It was bizarre. And then who? Oh, the last person we haven't spoken about. When he jumped in, I got where he was going. I thought maybe he could get some momentum. I thought maybe he could be up there with a Buttigieg or what I thought a Beto would be, but he has just bombed at every outing. I don't understand who his base is. Castro.
He is done. See, I don't think he bombed, but I don't know. Like, I agree with you. Like, I don't know who his base is.
Like, he's done nothing to set himself apart. I get that his pet issue is immigration. Totally great issue to have as your pet issue. Completely
great on that,
right? Completely commended him on it. But I almost feel like even when he's talking about it, he's not, you know, he's not Bernie talking about Medicare for all. He's not Elizabeth Warren talking about breaking up the big banks. He's not Kamala Harris talking about, you know, maybe not the best person to bring up about passionate about specific issues, but let's bring up her very impassioned speech to Joe Biden at the last debate. You know, he's, I don't get that vibe from him on immigration. he's just not getting across that, like, this is my thing and I know a lot about it and I'm passionate about it. Clearly he is, but he's just not showing it. And I don't know what his positions are on anything else, which is, you know, I get, again, everyone has their thing, but even in Andrew Yang, we heard a more rounded policy platform from him tonight than we did from Castro. I don't know what Castro's running for other than his immigration issues.
Yeah, two things about that. First of all is I think he's trying to be like Obama light, but there's already two other candidates who's trying to compete to be the next Obama, Pete Buttigieg and Beto O'Rourke. They have that, you know, the same Obama type of cadence down, that type of centrism. And so I don't think he does as good of a job as someone like Pete Buttigieg as being, you know, the next Obama, as that smart, wonky guy. You know what I mean? Second thing is the problem with him is that he's not the only one who's passionate about immigration, even if it's his issue and his go-to issue. Other candidates do a relatively good job at speaking about that. Like when Yang talks about UBI, nobody else talks about that. When Tulsi Gabbard brings up foreign policy, nobody really talks about regime change wars in the way that she does, excluding, you know, Bernie Sanders. When Jay Inslee talks about climate change, he really does a great job, and he does set himself apart from other people who care about climate change. But when it comes to, you know, Castro, the issue of immigration, like, everyone can do a good job at condemning what we're seeing, you know, the children in cages. So it's just, you know, he picked a lane, but everyone else can kind of play in that same lane and do a relatively good job. Now, he does have some standout moments, like when he called out Beto at the first debate for not wanting to decriminalize, you know, crossing the border. I thought that was great because it really sets himself apart as to why he's different here. But in terms of just overall making this his go-to issue, he just isn't that different from the other candidates who are good on this issue. And I think that's part of the reason why he's not really surging. And part of it is, like, he just, I don't know, he's not as charismatic as the other centrist type of candidates. Like, everyone who is a centrist is kind of going for Pete Buttigieg right now because he's the, you know, this wonky dude. He speaks like 32 different languages. So they're all kind of infatuated with that. So there is, you know, there's that lane. And then there is the Amy Klobuchar lane of centrist. Not that I would necessarily put Julian Castro in that same category, but she's kind of like the centrist who is, you know, a little bit nicer, less belligerent than someone like John Delaney who attacks Bernie Sanders and whatnot. So I feel like there's not really, it's hard to categorize Julian Castro. He's just, you know, like the rest of them, he's kind of a booker, but not as good of a booker, you know.
Right.
It's just, it's tough.
Yeah, you know, Beto jumping in the race, even as disappointing as Beto has been in the polls and everything, you know, it took away a lot of Castro's Texas base support.
Yeah.
I think I just saw a poll from Texas specifically. You know, Beto's doing fairly good in Texas in terms of polling. And you know, obviously that takes from Castro, who I can't even remember what position he was in on the poll, if they even showed him.
Yeah.
I forget that he's even running.
Yeah.
And I remember even the most, like, I know Marianne Williamson's running. I know Andrew Yang's running. I know some of these other guys who you'd forget are running. But, you know, Castro is just not. I can't put my finger on it, but it's weird to see someone who jumped in with such, you know, it's almost like another Beto, but weirder because, you know, Castro was a wild card where he could have pulled it off, whereas everyone else was sort of just like, you know, Beto is coming in with a little bit too much heat, thinking he's going to transition from Ted Cruz's opponent to super popular Democratic presidential candidate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's weird. It's weird.
Maybe if the field thins, like, he could stand out, but I think he's going to be one of the first cuts. You know, I mean, Eric Swalwell dropped out. And by September, the field is going to probably, you know, be trimmed down. Because to qualify, you need, what, 130,000 individual donations, 400 from each state, I think. You need to poll at 4%. So a lot of these candidates will, they're not going to make the cut.
Right.
So, I don't know.
What are we thinking? Who's going to be on the next debate stage? It's got to be, it's definitely the top four tier candidates are definitely in. You got Biden, Kamala, Bernie, Warren. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming Buttigieg.
Yeah, I'm assuming him too.
I'm assuming Beto.
Yeah.
I think Yang could pull it off.
I think Yang will be, because he did meet the individual donor threshold. I don't know that he's reached 4% in the polls yet.
There was a poll that they just disqualified, so he can't use that poll.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah. They told that apparently he was under the assumption he was in, and then they disqualified the poll.
Why did they disqualify it?
I don't know. I think it was like one of those weird polls that there's a lot of. I don't know if you looked at some of these weirder polls that don't get reported on as much. Like, mm-hmm. you know, they're not like the Seneca or the Quinnipiac pack or whatever these polls are. I'm too tired to remember the names of the ones I'm naming. But there's some really random polling out there. And some of the things are really – there was one poll I saw that has Warren leading everybody, even Biden. And I looked at how they got this from, and it was targeted online advertisements asking people to click through to a survey poll.
What?
And it's like, you can't that. You can't do that, because all you're saying is – and this bodes – I can't believe Warren's base would be this the type to do this. But all you're saying is people who fall for online advertising are going to vote in this poll. That's this bad polling criteria, if you ask me. But yeah. I'm not Nate Silver, though, so what do I know?
Yeah, he's the only one who could talk about polls. Otherwise, you know, be in trouble. But no, I heard, now that you bring up that poll with Elizabeth Warren, I heard CNN talk about it, just like it was in one of those like flash briefings on the Amazon Echo devices. And I thought, oh, that's weird, but I didn't really think much about it. But yeah, there's really, looking at aggregate polling data is always the safest bet. But in terms of like these candidates, there's so many that like, I think it would behoove some of these centrists, if they care about the radical centrist cause, to drop out, so that way support can kind of consolidate behind like maybe one or two centrists. Because do we really need 12 different centrists running who all look the same?
Right. Well, like, first of all, there's people who should just drop out now. Like, there's no purpose. Yeah. You're not going anywhere. Tim Ryan, get out. Hickenlooper, get out.
John Delaney.
Well, I do enjoy having him there as the goofy villain.
I hate him.
You gotta go,
Homer
buddy.
Simpson.
You gotta go, buddy. So
Steve Bullock,
you gotta. It was his first time on the stage too, but you gotta go. You're not going anywhere.
I do want De Blasio just to move that Overton window. I don't think he's gonna make the cut though.
No, De Blasio, buddy, get back to New York. What are you doing?
Yeah.
You want to be a progressive? You run the biggest city in the country. You can make incredible reforms right here in New York City right now. Why aren't you doing it? Like, he's talks a big game, but I can tell you as a New Yorker, he has not followed through. There's one really good thing he's done, in my opinion, and that's universal pre-K. And then in every other aspect, he's been a big disappointment. Mm-hmm. And so you got to go home, buddy. Come back to New York. There's literally major parts of the city flooding as if a hurricane hit it every time there's been a little bit of rain this summer so far. So jeez. You have a responsibility to us, De Blasio.
Yeah.
And then, who else? I don't know about Tulsi. I can picture her staying in and getting a little
bit. She just crossed the 100,000. If I had to guess, I'd say she's going to make the third debate. Another one that I'm kind of thinking is probably going to qualify is Booker.
Oh, Booker will probably qualify, right? Listen, I actually want just some of these no-chancers to take anything from anyone vote-wise away to get out, just so there's less time for them on the debate stage. Mm-hmm. But in reality, I want as many legit candidates in this race as possible when it comes to voting, because we're going to see a primary unlike any other. I'm already seeing people talk about, will Bernie drop out when he wouldn't last time when it comes down to it? I'm telling you right now, you're going to hear that even when it doesn't make sense this time around, for real. Mm-hmm. Like, not just because you want to build a movement like Bernie was doing. I mean, literally, Bernie will still be in it and people will be calling for him to drop out because they're not going to understand the different dynamics. This is, unless someone breaks away, like unless Biden continues to have the stranglehold, which I really don't see him holding on to as forcefully as people think he will, you know, unless that happens, this is going to be an incredibly close race where there is not going to be a winner when we get to the convention. And I think it literally will come down to the coalition building and deciding who drops out and who's going to hand who their delegates. And that's why I sort of think it's really smart for both Bernie and Elizabeth Warren to stay in this. You know, unless Warren is doing terrible and you know, Bernie needs those extra votes to beat Biden, that I also don't see that happening. I think it's going to be close all around. But I want Beto in this. I want Buttigieg in this. I want Biden in this. I want Kamala in this. I want those four to be splitting each other's votes so much that, you know, Bernie and Elizabeth Warren are just like rising on their own just from the
they
fact
have a
that
strong plurality. Like right. That's, and I was worried, actually, like when I saw that they were both running, I'm like, what are you guys do? Like, this is, you're going to split the vote. You know what I mean? Like, what are you doing? But it seems like based on like polling data that they kind of have different bases, but them both being in, I do agree with your point that if they kind of consolidated, they could both come out on top, you know, at the convention, if it is contested, which it could very well likely be the case because there are so many candidates who are like very close, like Kamala and Elizabeth are super close. Biden, you know, is, you know, he's in second, he's a strong second. But, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. And Joe Biden, I can't see him making it to the convention. And this is, like, I can't say because you don't know what the hell's going to happen. But if he has a strong showing at Iowa, if he actually wins New Hampshire, that'll be disappointing. And maybe we won't see, you know, a contested convention after all. But I think what you're saying is probably going to be the most likely scenario where there's a bunch of candidates that go in, maybe one or two of them with a big plurality, but maybe not enough to want to form like a coalition like Bernie and Liz and just have like a joint ticket. So I don't know. I don't know if that makes sense. I'm super tired as well. And my thoughts are a little bit scattered right now. But I don't know what's going to happen. I wish I had a crystal ball.
Right, right. It's going to be fun to watch at the very least. And hopefully no one screws it all up for us by electing someone who ends up losing to Trump, because that would be the worst case scenario. That'd be brutal.
Yeah, brutal. If that happens again, then it's like, how demoralized will people be? You know what I mean? Like, I can't. It's unfathomable to me. If we do the same thing that we did last time, I mean, Jesus Christ. Like, if that doesn't catalyze like party realignment, then nothing ever will. But I think that Donald Trump, he will be a little bit more difficult to beat this time because he has that incumbent advantage, you know, and it's just a matter of how many new voters Democrats get out, you know, how much of the base will be excited. And we all know a centrist isn't going to do that. We tried it. It's not going to work. So if Joe Biden's the nominee, it's like going to be tough. I'd say 50-50 chance that Donald Trump wins. If it's Bernie or Liz, I think Bernie probably has the best shot. Liz, I think after seeing her debate performances, I do have more confidence in her because at the beginning, like I was with that Native American stuff that she did, I was like, oh man, Liz, what are we doing? But I do believe that she actually is a lot stronger and more assertive than she, you know, than I thought she would have been. So she could be a strong force. If we see like a joint Bernie Warren ticket, I think they win. I think they beat Donald Trump.
Right.
The base would be so motivated. Like we would all be just like, we'd be in love with that.
Right. I'd be worried, honestly, about the joint ticket aspect. I'd be worried about losing both of them in the Senate, especially when the Senate is where...
That's true.
We're even if we win 2020, it's more likely we beat Trump in 2020 than it is we take the Senate. The Democrats take
I'm
the
starting
Senate.
To see that. And I was very optimistic coming out of 2018 because I'm like, look, Republicans have to defend more seats than Democrats. It's just math. But then when you look at those seats, it's like, oh man, these are kind of safe seats. So
which is why it's really disappointing, because I think Beto could have, you know, I don't want him as president, I don't really like the guy, but he's better than any Republican in Texas, that's for sure.
Sure.
And I think you know, if I think he would have been well positioned to beat what's his face, oh my god, I can't remember his name, it's so late.
John Cornyn.
Thank you.
See, I thought that at first, but there's somebody who's better who's running, Sema Hernandez, and she got like a really large percentage in the primary against Beto.
Right, but you know what I'm seeing now? There's a more establishment Democrat that's running, and she's the name I've been seeing everywhere. Not
Oh, seriously? See, I haven't heard.
Yeah.
Of course.
Right.
Of course.
So, you know.
That's always how it is. Like, if you have a progressive that's like really doing well in a particular primary, there's going to be an establishment candidate. Like, we all probably, like, I don't know if you remember Amy Valela in Nevada's 4th Congressional District. Basically, she challenged Ruben Kiwin, and he got Me Too'd out of the race. So she was the de facto frontrunner. And then, like, four establishment choices came in. You know, Biden came through and endorsed Stephen Horace Ford. So that's always the case, and it's so frustrating to see. Someone with more money, you know, well-financed,
right,
has establishment support. It just sucks.
Right. Well, if there's a Bernie Warren ticket and they win the presidency, they win the White House, I maybe I'll move to Vermont and run for Bernie's seat, Bernie's open seat. Cause
hell yeah.
We need someone to, you know, we can't let any more, you know.
I was thinking about this, actually, because I'm like, after seeing that debate performance, I was thinking, like, okay, how cool would it be if they were on a joint ticket? But at the same time, that leaves Merkley as the one, like, really solidly left person in the Senate. But it's like, at the same time, you know, do we sacrifice the Senate if it means we take out Donald Trump? Because that means we maybe preserve the Supreme Court from, you know, going further to the right. It's tough. And I don't know.
Right.
I really don't know what the answer is.
I don't see a scenario where Bernie is the vice president, but I can see a scenario where Warren is the vice president, and that would be good for her because she is younger. I know not by much, but she is young enough. There's, I think it's like a 4 or 5 year difference, but significant if we're talking president.
Mm-hmm.
Where she could possibly run again, whereas this is definitely going to be Bernie's 2020 is Bernie's last presidential run.
This is it for him. It's do or die right now. And I wouldn't want to be anyone's vice president if I'm Bernie. It's like, I don't think Bernie even wanted to run for president in the first place.
He didn't.
Wanted Elizabeth Warren to run in 2016, and she didn't. So now it's like, okay, kind of have a movement. Let's do it. Let's give it, like, you know, one last shot.
Right.
He
has the movement. Like, Warren's base is really interesting to me. And I know we're off the debates now a little bit, but maybe we'll end with this because it's getting late. But, you know, Warren's base, you said it yourself that Warren's base is not the same as Bernie's. And it's really weird to see because we would all assume that it would be. But you're seeing what it looks like is that, I said this yesterday, I think, Warren's base seems to be people who were more progressive for Hillary in 2016, who were more progressive than Hillary in 2016, but still liked her more because they had a personal issue with Bernie Sanders. I mean, that
totally
seems to
agree.
Be that seems to be her base. The, you know, I'm sure this will get me shit, I'm sure, but the cliche privileged white feminist seems to be Warren's base. The college educated, you know, and I don't just say this, I don't just mean women when I say this, I'm talking about men too. You know, the college educated, making around 100K or more, liberal, white feminist, meaning both men and women, who look at Bernie and don't like his, he's too angry.
He yells too
he
much.
He yells too much. He I don't like how he looks.
Mm-hmm. He's too old and, you know,
right.
And, he's sexist.
But at the same time, they're on board with all of his policies.
Yeah, yeah.
It's totally. it's or at least most of them. It's a bizarre dynamic there, but
it's very strange, and people just are not ideologically consistent. It's very personality driven. You know, that's what sucks about politics.
People. The angry thing against Bernie is I tweeted yesterday, I want to see the Venn diagram of the hashtag resistance people who post on their Facebook feed all day stories about what Trump is doing with the cliche comment, if you're not angry, you're not paying attention. And the Venn diagram of those people and people who complain on Twitter that Bernie Sanders is too angry. I'm sure it's a perfect circle.
Yeah, it's such a weird phenomenon. Like, I believe Neera Tanden said something nice about Elizabeth Warren on Twitter. It's like, wait, none of this makes sense. None of this makes sense. And I think part of it is maybe them trying to overcompensate because they were all called out by progressives because they were basically centrists, you know, Republican lights. So now they're proving, no, we are progressive. We're supporting, you know, Elizabeth Warren. It really was just Bernie, I promise you. But I don't know. It's hard, you know, trying to psychoanalyze the resistance people and just any political bloc is very, you know, it's a fool's game because who knows what motivates people. It's right. Tough.
I'm just waiting for someone. Maybe I'll end up doing it. I think it's a little bit too early to bring it up because I still want to see. I'm going to give Warren, because I like Warren, I'm going to give her the benefit of the doubt here, her campaign the benefit of the doubt here. If, you know, in 2016, Bernie Sanders was hassled nonstop for having a mostly white base and not doing well with minorities, even though that was just part of the story, because he was winning minority groups under, 35 or 40. Mm-hmm. So it was a generational gap, but still, he wasn't doing great with minority groups. But polling after polling has shown that next to Joe Biden, Bernie Sanders is the one doing best with minority groups. And actually, Warren is distant in the single digits. Yet you hear nothing whatsoever about Elizabeth Warren's African-American problem or Elizabeth Warren's Latino problem. Or Elizabeth Warren's Native American problem, talking about specifically about voting and not about DNA tests. But right. But yeah, you don't.
I didn't know about that actually. That's really. I did not know that she was performing that poorly. Like Warren's I knew that Biden and Bernie were, you know.
Warren's base are college educated white people. She is not doing well right now with in polling at least with minority groups. Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders are the front runners there with, I think Bernie Sanders is actually doing better with Latinos than anyone else. Whereas Biden takes African Americans and Harris is, a third place and Warren is fourth, I believe in single digits, by the way.
Okay.
From what I've seen.
That's crazy. Yeah. I think that this just tells me that like name recognition is a really powerful force, because back in 2016 Bernie did do well with young African-American voters, but part of the problem that a lot of us were saying was he like nobody knows who Bernie Sanders is. Every single person in the country knows who the Clintons are, you know, so right. that's going to be a big problem. It's going to be a barrier for him, you know, in the South and whatnot. And this time around everyone knows who Bernie is, and you know, if you know about the policies, you know about the record, then you will poll better. And you know, it shows. Maybe people also kind of link Biden to Obama, which is why he's doing well, but name recognition goes so far. And Warren, you'd think she'd have more name recognition, but I mean, there's also really big names in the race, so it's right. Hard to say, but that's interesting.
Well, you look at the polls actually, and you know, people made a big deal about those polls that came out a week or two ago. There was a few truly outlier polls showing Bernie dropping to like third or fourth. But look at the polling now and he's back up at second, because that's what happens with the polls. It's just a weird thing. But when you look at the actual numbers, it's not that Bernie is losing support. Yes, every other poll might show that he's up one or down one or up two or down two. But compared to everybody else, he's had a very consistent base. Biden will be up. We'll have 30 in one poll, drop to 20 in another, have 22 in one, and then have 28 in another. He's all over the place. Same with not as big of a gap, but same pretty much being all over the place with Kamala and Warren. The only person who's shown a consistent thread throughout has been Bernie's numbers, and you know, obviously he's got to build on that, but to have that base that can't be swayed, it puts him in a place that no one else is in.
Yeah, everyone else has that volatility that Bernie Sanders does not, which is why, you know, even if he's been dipping here and there, I think most of it is just other people are surging. You know, he has been consistent, and that's really important. So this is like, I know that this is going to be nerve-wracking, but it's also fascinating to watch it all play out, because it's like, this is a fight for our lives, and we all know Bernie's like the real deal. And I don't know. It's just interesting. Now I'm just rambling. I'm tired. But
no, it's all good.
You know what I'm talking.
Let's actually. It's almost. We're almost at 2 a.m. on the East Coast, people. So we're gonna wrap this up. Excuse me, folks.
We've both been talking too much politics.
Right. Right, folks, you could go too. Let me let you go first because it's late. Mike of the Humanist Report, thank you so much for joining me. Always a pleasure. Look forward to doing it again.
Absolutely. And if you want to learn more about me, you can go to Mike30330.
That's it.
I had to.
That's it. That's it. I'm done. I can't take it. I'm so tired. And that got me good. All right, Mike. For real, though, why don't you plug your show so you could actually, so people aren't ending up. Who knows? People might type in Mike30330. And I don't know. Maybe David Pacman is listening in, or Michael Brooks, or Kyle Kalinske, and they've just registered Mike30330,
yep.
And they're now forwarding it to their YouTube channel. Why don't you plug your actual channel?
All right, Humanist Report on YouTube. You can go to humanistreport.com, follow me on Twitter, and that's everything. I will be uploading like a bajillion videos tomorrow. I'm going to stay up pretty late editing, have lots of coffee, and try to, you know, get it done. But yeah, it's been a blast.
All right, Mike, always a pleasure. Take care. Have a good night.
You too, man.
Skype goes bloop bloop. All right, folks, that is the show. I'm not reading the comments tonight. I know you a lot of comments tonight. I am exhausted. It's 2 a.m. patreon.com/mattbinder. All I ask is $5 a month. You can give more, you can give less. patreon.com/mattbinder, and you could be on that list of there's no show without you, by the way, patrons. If you're listening to the show and you're not a Patreon subscriber and you could financially afford to do so, know that the show is not possible without the Patreon subscribers. As I choke here, I'm sorry. So maybe you could become one of those wonderful Patreon subscribers. patreon.com/mattbinder. Join this list of wonderful people. Abigail T, Adam Q, Alan B, Andrew H, Ari R, Benji, Bobby M, Brooke H, Champagne Kami, Chi, Christine H, Colin R, Dakota R, Dan M, Dan Huger, Dave K, David Z, Dragon Slayer, Floaties, Fraz K, Francis Zek, FTW All Day, Greg D, Ian Curtis J, Jameson Test, Janelle A, Jasmine H, Jeff K, Jonathan B, Joseph R, Katie S, Kat, Kyle, Lisa D, Max W, User Me, Melissa M, Michael J, Michael M, Mr. Danks, Nicole A, Namde Net, Romina O, Ryan Left His Best, Scott R, Stephen S, Struggle Session, TM, Tamney G, Thaddeus A, Tina M, Tom G, Tom M, Will P, Wutopian, and Zarin. You can also support this show by subscribing to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/mattbinder. Please subscribe to the channel. That is free to do. Help me build this YouTube channel. It would be wonderful to build this YouTube channel and get it up there with all the other wonderful YouTubers who have hundreds of thousands of subscribers, because I don't have hundreds of thousands of subscribers. I would like hundreds of thousands of subscribers. I don't have them. Help me out here. Also, leave an iTunes review, a Google Play review, a review wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow me at Matt Binder on Twitter, at Matt Binder on Instagram, which I've barely been using, but I'd like to use more. So follow me on there and I'll start using it more. Can't think of anything else. So what I'll do is bid you all adieu. And I will see you all next time on Doomed.